We've come to some very famous stories, Dogen stories, in the Tenzo Kyoken, that you will, if you read through the material of Soto Zen, find these stories mentioned off and on. They show Dogen as a young very curious young monk, the young monk who went all the way to China to see what was going on and what he could find out about the truth, what was true. And of course, the truth seems so vast and esoteric. It could be anything, really. And certainly, as a human race, we've concocted all kinds of theories about what the truth is. But what Dogen found was something else. So to continue, he talks first about the donations and how to kindly use the donations that come to the community. And that's how the community survives, is by donations from usually, especially the village where the temple and the monastery are connected. When we went to the group of women who went with Blanche to Rinzoin, to Suzuki Roshi's temple, behind the altar in the Zendo were big bags of rice this tall that had been donated. And they didn't have room for them in the kitchen, so they just put them back behind the altar where they were waiting to be served up through the years. So they accepted whatever arrived, and the Tenzo made do with what the food was, the cabbages, if it was cabbage, or the... it was always rice. Always, but things to go with. So then, with Jerry a few weeks ago, there was a discussion about what the Tenzo should do in the kitchen. And before the meal is served, the way we learned it from Kogen was that the Tenzo goes into the Zendo and does three bows to the altar, three prostrations to the altar before the food is served. First Manjushri is served, a little bite of each taste is in a little dish, and those are sensed first and presented to Manjushri, the bodhisattva of the sitting, the wisdom of sitting, which connects it with everything. And then the Tenzo comes in and does three prostrations. And then the food begins to serve with the chanting. So, of course, it's different at Chikoji. So then Jerry and I were trying to figure out what the cook should do at Chikoji. She can't really do prostrations very well in the kitchen, which is what is suggested here. But they've made a little altar in the dining room, and so Judy was Manjushri last time and sent the food first, and then Chris came in and did the prostrations. So as usual, you have to make it up according to whatever the situation is. It looks like there's just one way, but it's according to what's needed. So he says, this is really unusual that nobody has written about this stuff before. He said, it's really pitiful that it hasn't happened before. Buddhism has been in our country for so long and nobody's ever figured out how to do these things. So he tells the first story. When I was at Mount Tiantong, a monk called Lu from Qingyuan Fu was serving as Tenzo. One day, after the noon meal, I was walking to another building within the complex when I noticed Lu was drying mushrooms in the sun in front of the Buddha Hall. He carried a bamboo stick but had no hat on his head. The sun's rays beat down so harshly that the tiles along the walk burned one's feet. Lu worked hard and was covered with sweat. I could not help but feel the work was too much of a strain for him. His back was a bow drawn taut. His long eyebrows were crane white. I approached and asked his age. He replied that he was 68 years old. Then I went on to ask him why he never had any assistants. He answered, other people are not me. You're right, I said. I can see that your work is the activity of the Buddha Dharma, but why are you working so hard in this scorching sun? He replied, if I do not do it now, when else can I do it? There was nothing else for me to say. As I walked on along that passageway, I began to sense inwardly the true significance of the role of Tenzo. So here's another one that comes right after, the second story. I arrived in China in April of 1223. But being unable to disembark immediately, I stayed on board ship in the port of Ningbo. One day in May, while I was talking with the captain, an old monk about 60 years of age came directly to the ship to buy mushrooms from the Japanese merchants on board. I invited him for tea and asked him where he was from. He said he was the Tenzo at the monastery on Mount Ayuwang and added, I'm originally from Zixu, although I left there 40 years ago. I'm 61 this year and have practiced in several Zen monasteries in this country. Last year, while living in Guyun, I visited the monastery on Mount Ayuwang, though I spent my time there totally confused as to what I was doing. Then, after the summer practice period last year, I was appointed Tenzo. Tomorrow is May 5th, which is a very special day in Japan. It's Boy's Day. But I have nothing special to offer the monks. I wanted to prepare a noodle soup, but as I did not have any mushrooms to put in it, I came here to buy some. I asked, when did you leave Aoyuang? He replied, after lunch. How far is it from here? It is about 14 miles. When will you go back to the temple? I am planning to return as soon as I've bought the mushrooms. You can't imagine how fortunate I feel that we were able to meet unexpectedly like this, says Dogen. If it's possible, I wish you would stay a while longer and allow me to offer you something more. I'm sorry, says the monk, but that is impossible just now. If I am not there tomorrow to prepare the meal, it will not be made well. But surely, said Dogen, there must be others in place as large as Ayuwang who are capable of preparing the meals. They will not be that inconvenienced if you're not there, will they? The monk said, I've been put in charge of this work in my old age. It is, so to speak, the practice of an old man. How can I entrust all that work to others? Moreover, when I left the temple, I did not ask for permission to stay out all night. Dogen says, but why, when you're so old, do you do the hard work of a tenzo? Why do you not spend your time practicing zazen or working on the koans of former teachers? Is there something special to be gained from working particularly as a tenzo? He burst out laughing and remarked, my good friend from abroad, you do not yet understand what practice is all about, nor do you know the meaning of characters. When I heard this old monk's words, I was taken aback and felt greatly ashamed. So I asked him, what are characters and what is practice? He replied, if you do not deceive yourself about this problem, you will be a man of the way. At the time, I was unable to grasp the meaning of his words. The monk continued, if you do not understand, please come to Mount Ayuwang sometime and we will talk about the nature of characters more fully. With that, he rose quickly. It's getting late and the sun is about to set. I'm afraid I cannot stay any longer. And then he left for Mount Ayuwang. But very soon thereafter, he showed up at Mount Chiantong, where Dogen was staying, and said, as the summer practice period has ended, the Tenzo said, I shall be retiring as Tenzo and plan to return home. I heard that you were here and wanted very much to talk with you and see how you were doing. I was indeed happy to see him and received him cordially. We talked about various things and finally came to the matter he had touched on aboard that ship concerning the practice and study of characters. He said, a person who studies characters must know just what characters are, and one intending to practice the way must understand what practice is. I asked him once again, what are characters? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he answered. And what is practice? There is nothing in the world that is hidden. Although we talked about many other things, I will not mention them here. Whatever little bit I have learned about characters and practice is largely due to that Tenzo. When I met again with my teacher, Myo Zen, who later died in China, and told him of my meeting with the Tenzo from Mount Ayuwang, he was extremely happy to hear about it. Later on, I came across a gatha Zhou Du had written for one of his disciples. 1, 7, 3, 5. The truth you search for cannot be grasped. As night advances, a bright moon illuminates the whole ocean. The dragon's jewels are found in every wave. Looking for the moon, it is here, in this wave, in the next. And Dogen says, I realized more than ever that the Tenzo was a man fully living out the Buddha Dharma. He said, I used to see the characters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now I also see 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Future students must be able to see that side from this side and this side from that side as well, practicing with intense effort, using all your ingenuity, you'll be able to grasp genuine Zen that goes beyond the surface of characters. To do otherwise will only result in being led about by variously tainted Zen that will leave you incapable of preparing meals skillfully for the community. So what do you think he meant by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? When I first read this, I was totally mystified. I had no idea what it was about. It was too simple. It sounds very esoteric and amazing. But one is one. And all around and ever more so shall be so, as we say. Tenzo needs to be absolutely present in the absolute situation in which she finds herself moment after moment. And if it's getting mushrooms for the noodle soup, it means going out into the hot sun and walking 14 miles to get there and back. Practice is living a full and very fully dedicated and intense kind of life, dedicated to life itself, dedicated to this vivid moment in which we are so privileged to be able to live and to live so well, so that we can practice. And as Dogen says, there's another side to the absolute moment of action in which we cope with whatever there is to cope with, that our sitting practice itself is the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And the seem like two different things, but of course each is in service to the other, so it's happening continually and it always goes together. So if you get a Tenzo who doesn't sit, it's a completely different kind of life and effect on the whole of the monastery. If you have a Tenzo who has a sitting practice, then that is infused with the food and everything that is being done. And that's true of everything that we do as practicers. That we ourselves, we don't have to think about, I am this practicing person in the kitchen and doing these marvelous things. We just do and be from the practice place, just as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Uchiyama Roshi has several different translations for some of these that are included in the notes. One of them is that if you understand precisely what you're asking to be the most vital problem concerning the Buddha Dharma, then that in itself is understanding characters. That is practice. Just asking about it. And there is nothing in the world that is hidden. Isn't that the greatest message? Isn't that a relief? Uchiyama Roshi says this is derived from the expression Hengai Fusozo, meaning that the truth of life manifests itself in all places and in all things, just as they are. When the tenzo counts to five, he implies that everything is the answer. Here he says that everything in our life is practice. So this last thing about practicing Zen, without variously tainted Zen, Uchiyama Roshi says, genuine Zen is a translation of Dogen Zenji's expression Ichimi Zen, which means literally one flavor Zen. Ichimi Zen is being used in contrast to Gomi Zen, literally five flavor Zen, which this is Okamura who translated this. Five-flavored Zen, which I translated as variously tainted Zen. In other words, the Ichimi Zen is Zen which is untainted by various types of humanistic or altruistic motives. That's interesting. It's not about being good. It's not about going out and making everything okay, even. Uchiyama Roshi translates this passage as follows. If you practice in this manner, you will be able to grasp Zen as incomparable life in its widest dimensions that goes beyond the surface of characters. Otherwise, you will be hindered by Gomi Zen that has been tainted by various rankings, and which is being practiced here and there, causing you to lose sight of life that is vigorous. Consequently, even when preparing meals for the community, you will be unable to function with the utmost intensity. That's kind of convoluted, but I think he means that if it gets too hierarchical and too thoughty and too bureaucratic, it just becomes another position, and then all kinds of things develop within a community. Who's better than whom? Who gets what? And who misses out on what? And it gets very messy. And practice falls away. Which happens. It happened in Buddha's time too. You know, the monks got into big arguments, and sometimes Buddha just got fed up and went away. He couldn't take it. They kept coming to him and asking him to solve the problem, and he kept saying, no, it's up to you. It's hard living together. It's wonderful living together. It's a challenge. We all know that challenge. So there's time for discussion.
If I don't do it now, when will I do it?
Yes.
Whatever time has he got?
Yes. It's the only time we have. It's funny how the mind flies into the future and back to the past, though. We never think that we only have now. It's very hard to think that, because we're always winding towards something else at the same time without a lot of practice. and some enough leisure. I think leisure is also a clue, because if we're just trying to do something every minute of the day, we don't have the joy of addressing what's in front of us. We do it like Lucy did, you know, and answer the doorbell at the same time and stir the pot and all the many things there are to do. To do things one at a time is really, really hard. But it's joyful. Artists know it. Musicians know it. You can only play one chord at a time. You can't play two. It doesn't work that way. Carolyn?
With your comments remind me, I'm about doing one thing at a time. I read recently an article by a woman, Dr. Turkel, Sherry Turkel, who has studied the interplay between humans and technology for over 30 years. I think she's at Harvard and Yale.
And MIT.
MIT. Doing one thing at a time. Now this, she made this interesting point that I think resonates with Dogen's points about the tenzos that he meets doing this thing. What Paul said that are what you just said about the leisure and the joy. She said, like, we can come back to remember by doing one thing at a time that being solitude is a part of connection and compassion. So those two, psychologically, according to the studies she's done and cited, go together. They complement each other.
Interesting.
Particularly these are the ones about the kids at device-free camp, summer camps, and how middle schoolers, and how it was a revelation to them that they could just be alone and think, was kind of the term they used, but and then talk with their friends. So they had time alone and time to be together.
Oh, that makes me sad.
she was actually very hopeful. She said
that there are camps like that.
Well, she said it takes intention, just as what Dogen is saying. She her conclusion was that we can do this. This is very deeply embedded in us. We can do it. We can make a choice. She also had a lot of specific suggestions about changing the technology, and in fact, there are technological changes now. Certain phones you can actually not be tethered to.
I mean, just leave it at home?
Yeah. Well, there's that. Anyway, I mean, well, actually, you've built into the machine that they won't, you know, ring or alert you. You can turn all the notifications off. And she suggests that that people can start doing this when they have children at a very young age, so that it becomes we're just talking together instead of always checking facts on our phones.
Yes.
So I thought she was ended up quite hopeful.
Well, I'm glad it's hopeful. It's amazing to see how immersed people become in every situation. If there's any pause, the phone comes out. Yeah, it's our era. That's what we get.
and I thought I had a deprived childhood. I was living the best years of my life.
Yes. Yes, they were, weren't they?
Made up our own story.
Yes.
Played our own games.
Right.
Ran around in the street.
Put up our own plays, circuses.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now I know why I miss it.
I had an experience last week where I'm taking an online class on poetry, but we actually met, and four of us met in a coffee shop, and we did what's called a close reading of a poem.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, we spent a whole hour on, I don't know, 8 times 2 lines of poetry. I mean, it was really interesting. And everybody was kind of on task. Nobody, you know, we had a little socialization at the beginning, but it was really just going around and talking about this poem. And it's so unusual to spend that much time.
Just to keep keep looking and looking again.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you keep finding more.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's 8 o'clock, almost 1 minute from there. We have a business meeting tonight in another 10 minutes or so after we set up the room, and everyone is warmly invited to participate. Wendy has set up a nice agenda. It won't be long. So. Is there anything else to announce? We're all set for everything.
Well, I think Karen sent out a request for people to sign up on the Doan sheet, and if you prefer to do it offline, there's one on our bulletin board.
Oh, and Beata is giving a weekend sit at Jikoji starting on the 30th of October for that weekend. And that's the flyer on the floor there. And everyone is invited. Beata, she was our Eno once when whoever was the Eno fell through a couple of years ago at Jikoji.
In February.
And she just took over and did such a wonderful job. She's one of Darlene Cohen's students and knows a lot about the body and pain in the body and how to adjust and how to be a body. And is a wonderful practitioner. So it's an opportunity, one more sitting opportunity. You're all invited. So we'll do our 1 minute sit.